So here and there we use biblical context, and we use the Bible for reference for some of the text, because the Bible is not a religious book, but it's just a book full of psychological truth, and there's a lot of wisdom hidden behind the words spoken in there. And this is truth based on the mind, and if the mind governs your life, then you can call the Bible your autobiography. It's a book about you. But people have made it a book about judgment and pointing finger and the heaven and earth. It's not that. It's talking all about you and your mind. That's all he talks about. Well, today we're not gonna go to power or any other topic. We're gonna stick to this very topic. There's a fair bit we're gonna get through. So feelings, we've been dealing into what exactly feeling is and what exactly it is, and how it works. And we're gonna get straightforward to it. And there's gonna be some terminology we're gonna need to understand before we can get deeply into it. Well, we know very well, we're gonna start by the second one, so it's thought. We know it's a thought is a sudden occurring of ideas and information that pops in your mind like light bulb. You have no control in terms of timing. You can't, if I say everybody stop thinking now, nobody has control over that very thing, because it pops out without your permission. And so we have intention, and intention is the act of observing a new future, and that future could be positive, it could be negative, but it's something new. And matter of fact, there is times where something is observed and we think it's a new future, but it's the same old thoughts, and in that case it's not an intention, it's just a repetition. Well, then we have an attitude. It's a cycle of linked thoughts and feelings, and so whenever I link a thought and a feeling together, that gives me a certain attitude. Well, then we have memory, and we know very well that memory is a record of all things you've experienced. We're talking about DNA, and we're talking about your past, and also your senses, so your five senses. So your five senses may experience certain information, and they're recorded and put in your memory. And the reason they do that and the way they do that is if you combine that with a feeling, and we'll get through it later on. Then we have perception. We got a belief. And a belief essentially is a thought that you keep thinking over and over again, so you've cemented it in your mind. And because you've cemented it in your mind, you've repeated it so many times that it becomes, it's like to your mind, repetition is equals to truth. So the way you tell your mind something is true is through repetition. That is the only way you tell us something is true. There is no other way. And when I'm talking about your mind, I'm talking about, we know very well, there's the conscious mind, which is where your thinking and reasoning come from. And then there is a subconscious mind, which is where the programming of your whole life comes from. And everything you do most of the time, it's done through your subconscious mind. So it's done subconsciously. Matter of fact, we don't know why we do what we do. We don't know why we dress the way we do. We don't know why we talk the way we do. We know not why we study the things we do. And we know not why we enjoy certain things and other things we don't enjoy. A fair bit of that is just happens in the background without your consent. Well, to say it happens without your consent is actually incorrect, because your consent is repetition. So imagine it's like a loop. It's looping through and it's asking you, Master, is this true? And you say, yes, you repeat it. Is this true? Yes, yes, yes. And every time you say yes, it's repeated. And the higher the repetition, the more truth it is, the more you're founded in that belief. And then that creates something we call perception. And that's a bundle of beliefs. So if I have a belief about, if I say, for example, in this room, God, all sorts of perceptions are going to come out. And that's the cause of belief and memory and attitude and all this stuff bundled together. And so But the thing with perception is this. It's very interesting because when we go into new topics or new areas where there is no exact memory in terms of that experience, what happens is this. Is, for example, a lot of people, you hear them say, oh, I want nothing to do with a relationship. And you ask them, man, you want to get married or you want to have a partner and stuff? And they'll say, no. They'll say, oh, I don't have time for that. Well, the desire of everybody is always to be in relationship. Every human has a desire to always be in relationship. But if we start escaping being in a relationship, it is because of the perception we hold of it. And so what happens? What happens is, for example, my parents would have gone through all sorts of ups and downs in their relationship, and I watched it growing up. Or my cousin would have gone through this breakup or that breakup, or things I heard on the news and this, all that stuff. If believed, went in, and if I added an emotion to it, it was stored into my memory. And so when I hear something about relationship, it might be a completely different context. But what will happen is, when I go in face to face with that situation, 5% of it is actually what I know from that very circumstance. 95% of it, 9 out of 10 times, is we go to our memory and we say, what data do I have in the topic God? And that it gives you the data you stored in from past experience, and you fill in the rest. And so when people fill in the rest and they're so strong on what they're saying, it's not because they actually know what they're saying, it's because that's what's in their memory. And we do that with everything. Sex is another thing. When someone says sex, all different perceptions run left and right. And it's because of the bundle of things we've stored in our memory. That's the 95% of the idea we get from. Well then, this, now that we do know this, we see now feeling. And I wrote feeling at the very top, and I wrote it as a chemical. And so we can actually understand what happens. And actually, I'll leave it for this slide and we'll get to it. Now, suppose I wanted to change the way I feel. What is the process to changing the way you feel? Anybody? I can't hear him.
Change your perception.
Okay. All this stuff sounds good, but how do we do that? That's always been the struggle. Everybody knows my thoughts are wrong. It creates these negative emotions and so forth. We know that. Everybody knows that. But changing it is another story. Being able to identify something doesn't give you victory over it. Even though it opens your eyes to it. Matter of fact, no wonder why we struggle so much with sicknesses, because the medical field, all we've done is come up with different names for different sickness. This must be arthritis, this must be this. A new biological name comes up, a new medical terminology comes up to describe that very thing. He's diagnosed with this, and then when this doesn't sound alright, and we find out there's another thing, we say, all right, let's make it more complex. Let's go look for a Greek word or a Hebrew word, a Latin word. Let's give it some very nice words. That's what we've been doing. We've been naming stuff for days. And we've been thinking that once we give it a name, then that makes the difference. Well, name is important for identification. But we've limited ourselves to just that. And so, going back to the question, suppose I wanted to change the way I feel. What is the process? Let's put it in context. For example, let's say I was at work and someone lied about something, and they lied about a work that I did, which I believe I didn't do, and they blamed it on me. Well, the manager came and said, you know what, Joe? You're fired. You've lost your job. Well, I'm angry. I'm annoyed. Well, then I want to change the way I feel. In that very moment, what's the process?
Change the meaning you assign to the senses.
Very interesting.
How would I do that? What's the process of me changing the meaning I give my senses?
I can't hear you.
So, for example, that's me. I've just lost my job, right? So how would I send my senses out? My senses come back and they tell me you've lost your job. Everyone's saying this, that. How will I change that? What do I do?
Very interesting question. Ruben said to one way we can do that is by changing the meaning of it. And just before we get back to that question, how do we do that? Suppose we go through this slide here, and that gives us like a head overview of what really goes on. For every given circumstance, this is what happens. Your five senses go out and they pick up information from the ear, from the sight, from everywhere, from touch, from feels, and they collect a bunch of information about your environment and your surrounding. And it takes all that information back to you. And that information is pure data. It's like if you know a database, it's just a database. A database just stores data. It's got no intelligence to it. It's just pure data, pure information. It's not good, it's not bad. Well, then the data and the information comes to the master, comes to the user, which is yourself. And then he says, with this information that I've collected, what am I going to do with it? Well, that's when the meaning comes in. Because now you have to apply some intelligence to it. And that's when you hear things like machine learning and artificial intelligence, that's it. They've copied it from the mind. They've observed how the mind works time and time again. And they've developed these kind of technologies. It's because it's this very process of information and data being collected. It comes into the control center, which is yourself. Well, then now you have to give it a meaning. You have to say whether the information you collected is bad, good, necessary, important, high value, devalue, attachment. What does that mean to you? Does that mean your manager hates you? If we're going back in that circumstance of losing a job. And you have to interpret it. You are the artificial intelligence behind the information. I have to interpret it. What does that mean? Someone swears at you. What does that mean? And I always tell the story of I mentioned last week, of how my car got broken down twice. Someone chucked a rock at it, broke the screen. Twice. That very moment, you almost, and if you track back, you will realize that at that very moment, you have conversation with yourself. And you ask yourself, and it happens so fast, and it's, what does this mean? That's the first question that's asked to you. And you have to give it a meaning. And so, when you give it a meaning, it's like you're delegating or allocating that information to and sending it to a place where it's going to be where something's going to be done. For example, I get a certain for that situation of losing the job and somebody blaming me. I come in and I say, this must mean racism because it must be because I'm black. Well then. In that very moment, It's a mirror effect. On one side you have a meaning, on the other side you have feeling. Well, let's go back to the slide before. What does it say? It says, feeling is a chemical. These are neurons which are transformed into networks to reflect the information from the senses. So what does that mean? It means if the meaning is, it's because I'm black, and so now I'm angry. I feel a sense of devaluation. I feel a sense of inequality. Well then, the mirror on the other side, so this is a pattern given, and so there's a process that happens in the middle where this pattern shapes, cause neurons and shapes them in the mirror of the meaning. So then he says, which emotion goes hand to hand with feeling devalued? Well, then the emotion that goes hand to hand with that, first of all, you'll feel angry and you'll feel very defensive and you want to fight for yourself and this, and you'll feel like you're hated. And all these feelings that are associated with the meaning you've given it are generated. Why are they generated? They're not generated because they want to be generated. They're generated because you've commanded them to be generated. You are the one that told it, generate this emotion now, because of the meaning you've given it. So at all time, it's always a mirror effect. I give it this meaning, it generates this emotion. I give it this meaning, it generates this emotion. Well, for example, let's say I lost a family member. The moment I receive that news, I go through my memory and I realize, oh no, so-and-so left me. Or if I had a partner and she left me or so, I go in. What does that mean? It means I did something wrong. I'm not good enough. That's what it means. Well then, what are the feelings about being not good enough? It generates those feelings. And then you look at yourself in the mirror, guess what you see? I'm not good enough. You go to work, guess what you see? I'm not good enough. Well, it becomes your everyday life. And everywhere you go, that's the mirror that displays to you everywhere. Well, that mirror displays to you even to the point where someone may even be capable of screaming at your face, you're useless. Well, then you feel like, oh, this person screamed at me that I'm useless. But no, you screamed at yourself that you're useless. Why? Because you are walking around with a badge. And you're walking around with a badge, and the badge is saying, call me useless. Because you've given the meaning that you're useless, and so you replicate it as a mirror effect, and people walk around reading it. Because the feeling is like a vibration. It's like when people walk in a room and say, I feel your energy. And you do all the time. You walk in a place and you feel someone's energy. You know when someone is no good. Even though you don't even understand how you read it, but you do. Because what it is, it's a badge someone is wearing. Treat me badly. That's how a lot of people walk in relationships. Take advantage of me, they walk in. I'm here so you can take advantage of me. That's what they're saying. They don't even know that's what they're saying. A lot of people walk into job opportunities and they say on their face, use my talent, never reward me. That's a lot of cases for a lot of us. We have great skills, but we don't think the skills are of any good. I was telling Ruben today in the car when we were coming here about a parable of talent. Ruben, can you give us a summary on that? There's a parable of talent. Can you give us a summary on that? What's the story behind it?
God gave three men different amounts of talent. One man he gave five, another man he gave two, and another man he gave one. And the man that had five made five more. The one that had two made two more. And the one that had one buried it in the ground and gave it back to God. And the man that had five entered into the joy of his Lord. So did the one that had two, but the one that had one got punished.
Yeah, so
because he should have put it in the bank and made interest.
100%. And so the whole picture of the story is talents are given to a lot of people, and one got given 5 and he multiplied and made it 10. The other got given 2, he also multiplied, made it 4. Another got given 1, and he was too fearful to multiply it because of his perception of himself. And the thinking was that, alack, this is all I have. I cannot bear to lose it. And so what did he do? He went and hid it, hoping that nobody could steal it and take it away from him, and so forth. Well, a lot of people do that in relationship. They hold on to their partner like glue, because this is all I have. But by doing that, you actually lose what you have. And so, going back to this explanation of feeling, is just a replica, it's a mirror effect. Now, to answer this question and say, suppose I wanted to change the way I feel, what is the process? And so I've just enlightened a couple of things there. Now I want to hear what you guys will say. What's the process of changing the way I feel? Anybody?
Well, yeah, I guess just challenging the thoughts that come to mind.
Challenging the
thoughts. The thoughts that have already been programmed into you.
Yeah. And that's very interesting, that word of challenging. Suppose I go up to somebody and I challenge them. That creates a field of duality. It creates a battlefield. Now, imagine you are going into battle and you don't know when the enemy strikes. Can you sleep at night? Imagine you're going into battle and you're standing on the field, right? And you're there ready to fight, but you don't know what time of the day the enemy is going to show up. How paranoid do you get? Because you got to stand there 24 hours waiting for the enemy to show up. Well, then you're tired, you're stressed, you're angry, you're frustrated. Because thoughts arise like hiccups. What time of the day are they going to arise? Is he going to fight them and challenge them? If we're going to take that approach of straight ahead, direct approach of challenging, well, already we're exhausted, because now I'm consciously waiting for my thought. I'm waiting for these negative thoughts to come up. There you are. Now I'm trying to fight. Well, then I can't even sleep at night. But that's a good approach, because that's the approach we've always been taking. It's the common approach. It's like when someone says something wrong to you, you want to respond, right? Because that's the common approach. Because you want to go head to head. We want to react. What's another approach? Anybody else? Challenging the thought could be one way.
I'm thinking probably surrounding yourself with positivity. So the things that bring joy to you. If you can preoccupy your mind with positive thoughts, hopefully those negative thoughts are put somewhere far behind in your mind.
I think separating yourself from the thought, so rather than thinking of it inside of you, rather just put it out there and just have a look at it and try to understand why you feel that way and kind of break it down from there and see where the root cause of it is, and then just understand it. So I feel like when you understand it, it'd be easier to change your state of mind.
Yeah, so we got two very interesting answers there. And you mentioned, Justine, you mentioned about changing the environment and putting yourself in a place where it is, it's all positive and positive and positive thoughts. One thing that I do see, is that possible for us to do in this world of chaos? To always be filled and circled with people of similar mindset, of positivity, is that possible? Even though that's one thing, we definitely must look after the environment, because the seed needs its environment to grow. But one angle we must look at it is that the moment you walked in this building, the person riding his bike is negative. And so he must say one thing and I might catch your thought. And then Bernadette, you mentioned something very interesting about separation. Separating yourself from the thought. What happens when you separate yourself from a thought? Is that even possible?
Then you never overcome it.
Why do you say that?
Because it's still there, and if you don't address it, you have to address it later.
So the thought is there, and you believe if we don't address it, which comes back to what Kyle was saying. Tyler. Yeah, I was saying Kyle. I'm thinking of somebody else. Tyler was saying about challenging the thought, right? Challenging it, going heads to hands against it.
Yeah, and as someone who's been through talking to a lot of like psychologists and stuff, that's something I've been told a lot, is like you need to challenge the thoughts. And it is exhausting, sort of hearing you talk about this like duality stuff. Like, that's so refreshing to hear, because that's stuff that I've realized before, and I've never really heard it back before. But yeah, I guess in a weird way, one way to approach it would be sort of acceptance, because sort of you feel like these thoughts are bad, but they're natural thoughts, you know. Like, if you get fired, you're allowed to feel angry, you're allowed to feel sad, but yeah, it comes down to how you approach them. It's not the trigger, it's what it triggers, I guess, in a way. So rather than trying to change sort of what happens to sort of trigger this pathway in your brain, you can just sort of try to like redirect the path. So instead of immediately leading towards that anger, you don't challenge it and just sort of go, yes, okay, I'm angry, but how can I sort of address this feeling productively rather than just dwelling on it?
I like your word you used there, redirect. Anybody else?
I would say detachment.
Yeah.
Detachment from the things, materialistic things, because of this outer world, you are feeling everything.
Yeah.
So just detaching from those things and just stay in your own. If it's like you lose the job, okay. Yeah, it's coming.
Yeah.
It's coming. If you find a better partner, yeah, good. Like, don't get overexcited and don't get oversad. It's coming. Everything is there.
Yeah.
If you get happy, it's happy, yeah, stay like that. Don't get, oh yes, yes, I got it. Nah, it's stay still. Anything is coming, just stay still. So that's how we detach from the things and we move forward.
Very good, very good, very good say that. And it goes hand to hand with what Bernadette was saying about separation. To separate from things, you must separate from the thought. Well then, if you look carefully and you think carefully, you realize there's a lot of times where you are the thinker thinking of the thought. You can be the thinker thinking of yourself thinking of the thought. You do it all the time. Well, if you do that, and if you have the ability and the capacity to do that, that tells you there's a higher entity in you. There's a higher power in you that's separate from everything you've attached yourself to. And we're talking money, life, family, everything.
Yeah. Like with the duality in your mind, you've always got some negative thoughts about, like, oh, you'll never amount to nothing, or, you know, your parents were poor, you're going to be poor, and you've got another thought of train saying, like, you're either accepting it or denying it, saying, like, oh, yeah, you're right. And there's always that conversation going on between the two. And when you step back, you realize you're watching the conversation. And you're neither the negative nor the fighter, but you're the observer of those two thoughts.
Just when you're talking about observing the thoughts or observing the conversation, thoughts, I want to put in this illustration, because it's the same when someone came up, when people came up to me and they said, you can't start a business. I went, okay, what does me saying okay do? It doesn't start conflict. But by me, if I go ahead and start saying, why can't I do this, etc., it'll start conflict. Same with our thoughts. If a thought comes and I just go, okay, I'll watch it. I just say, be there. And just let it do its thing, because thoughts come all the time. You know, there's no resistance there, because once you start resisting, that thought will keep occurring. There's no resistance, but if I go and challenge the thought, it causes resistance, and then that's when the thought comes up stronger each time. So it's the same with people. When you fight someone, it's the argument just gets stronger.
And yeah, from what you were just saying about, like, thoughts coming up, like, the brain, we can have control over our brain, but generally we have very little. Like, our brain is constantly taking in information. And that's why it's so hard to fight these sort of negative emotions, is because we build up these pathways without realizing it, you know? Because even little things can build up these sort of instantaneous emotions that then trigger when other stuff happens.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that's why you sort of, if people say, like, oh, you can't start a business, and every time you go, oh, well, why not, and start a conflict, then that's going to link in your mind to, oh, talking about starting a business leads to conflict, which leads to negative emotions, so I shouldn't start a business.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. I try.
That's very interesting. And we've always been told to create conflict and to fight for your rights and do all this stuff. But suppose somebody comes in with anger, and they come in and address you, and they yell, they speak, all that laughs. You're this, you're that, you're this. Suppose you just stand there, say nothing, do nothing. What happens to them? It nullifies their power. Because whatever you ignore is nullified. Whatever you give attention to is amplified. And so, one of the stories, even in biblical Bible, the story that we know a lot about Adam and Eve, and we know about the apple. That's always been the problem there. The apple is there. Well then, you give it attention, you amplify it. The temptation is there. You give it attention, it grows, it doubles, double portion, triples. And then you say, oh, I want to stop it. The moment you say you want to stop something, another phrase of it is like, a man says it like this, it's like letting the devil know you want to be free from his chain. Another way of saying it is, suppose I wanted to steal from you, and I came to you, I said, oh, I'll be stealing from you at 5 o'clock. Well, then you're ready. Do you know how to stop me from stealing at 5 o'clock? Well, you go to your thoughts and you say, I want to change you now. The moment you've done that, you've awakened opposition. Well, then the key is to change without awakening opposition. It's to transform without awakening opposition. It's to shift without any opposition. It's almost as if you have to instantly reach a state without having to go through a whole process. It's like sometimes we do that. You're sleeping, the alarm rings, boom, you wake up. Straight away you're up bed. And sometimes you're there and you're thinking, oh no, the alarm, should I wake up? The moment you start reminiscing those thoughts, you're creating opposition now. Now the thoughts come in. No, don't wake up. It feels good. It feels nice. Opposition now, and the longer you stay there, the opposition increases. Well, but if you do a sudden change, sudden movement, boom, there's no time for opposition to wake up. Well, this opposition is what they call the devil. It is an opposition you've empowered. Because you have the power. Well then, we see now that this feeling is directed by the meaning. And then, so now if we're going in a certain frequency, well then, we gotta redirect it. Let's have a look at this slide, and let me just say that last line, and this feeling is what creates your current reality. It really is. Humans are not physiological, they're psychological. For every decision you make, there's a feeling behind it. And people have come up to me and said, John, if I could just stop my emotions, I could think straight. Do you understand what you're saying? You can't. There is no such thing. And that's because we have a perception of when we speak of emotion, we speak of negative emotions. Nobody thinks of when you're calm, that's an emotion. Stillness is an emotion. Happiness is an emotion. All these, if someone is always happy, they're very emotional. Well, nobody's going to say that. People are going to say, if you're very happy, oh, that guy is good. Someone is sad, very emotional, is a sad one. What you mean? For every decision, there is a need for it. Emotion. Because the emotional the factor is what governs the decision. It always does. It's always been doing that. Well then, we see senses are only servants. And you are the master. And the problem is that we've been treating our senses as our masters. Why? Because the sensor goes and collects information, and you want to make that information final. You want to make that information true. But no, the senses, the job of it, it's like you are in a castle. You're a king in a castle, and you send the guards out. You go, go find out about this, the spies. You send some spies out. Go find out about this land. Go find out about this. Well, when they come back with the information, they come to you. They said, Master, what should we do with this? What should we do now? This is the current situation. Well, then you decide what to do. Your senses do not see. It's a combination of the mind and memory that has sight. For example, there was an experiment that was done by a federal scientist, and so what they did is that they got certain people to wear certain goggles for a period of a week. And after a week, when they took off the goggles, however they were seeing and perceiving things when they had the goggles on, became their perception of everyday life for a fair long time. For, I think it was a month or so. Why? Because the eyes don't see. The mind sees. Lizzie is just a servant. It's a portal to collect information. But in the mind, in the memory, that's when things take place. The mind goes and visits memories and says, what do you have in there? They're taking there. Then they go to the master and say, master, we're here. What's the meaning of this? And they say, all this means so and so and so. And you delegate it across. Well then the Bible speaks of this principle. It says, walk by faith and not by sight. Because it's telling you the sight does not see. Faith is a higher faculty of the subconscious. Faith is one of the highest faculty, I would even say. To the point where you do nothing without faith. You wouldn't drive here if you didn't have faith. You must believe that your car will crash to drive. If someone called you and said your car is about to crash if you drive today, you won't drive. You'll lose all faith. To write, you have to have faith. To eat, you have faith. To drink water, you have faith. You have to believe the water you're drinking will not hurt you. Even sitting here and listening to me, you must have faith. You can't do it. Your mind will not allow you to listen to anything I say without faith. To even pick up the mic and speak on it, you need faith. So then, is there an escape from faith? No, it's not an escape from faith. Whether you know it or you don't know it, everything is done by faith. Everything, even showering, you have to have faith that there is no danger. Well then, your senses, your sight, your smell, your taste, your touch, the hearing, these are wonderful servants, but they're horrible masters. But these are the servants of the outer gate. Your mind and its faculties, these are the servants of the inner gate. And this is the concept, the outer gate, the holy place, and then the holy and holy, that's where you live. You are the master. And at every point of moment, you have to delegate your whole body. You have to give delegation. You have to delegate them. Your life is your company. Literally. Every single part of your body has a job to do and you delegate it every day. You are the CEO. There's no other CEO. It's only you. You delegate. You say, this is your job. This is your job. This is your job. Without delegation, you couldn't even be sitting here alive. But you do it so subconsciously, so purely, so quickly. The art of waking up. And if I want to show you that you've delegated even on conscious level, for example, if I want to wake up at 5 o'clock tomorrow morning, before I sleep, I just look, what time I want to wake up? 5 a.m. on the dot. Well, guess what? I go to sleep. Guess what time I wake up? 5 on the dot. And you've done it already. You've told yourself one day that you want to wake up at this certain time and you wake up exactly then. Because your whole senses is in sync with the universe. It's so in sync that your subconscious, in the milliseconds. Why? Because every single part of this world is always listening to you. Every single one of your thoughts is broadcasted to the whole world at all time. Well then, this process of change, let's have a look at this process of change. And this time I've numbered them in how it works. Well then, the process of change, the first step is always intention. I must have an intention. I couldn't even talk to you if I didn't have no intention. For everything you do, I do, there has to be an intention. and in intention, you have to observe a new future. You always do. Before you do any act, you've observed a new future in your mind. And sometimes it happens so quick you don't even know you did it. Well then, the intention is the first step. That intention, when sent, because it's sent out, it's broadcasted. My intention is so and so. I broadcast it to the universe, broadcast it to God. Well then, what does that do? It attracts in the superconscious all sorts of thoughts that you can never think of. Is there? It's just laying around waiting for someone to call him. Well then he's, Tala's calling you. Okay, let's go. They will come running. It's the same way when you make a phone call. Your call is first broadcasted to everywhere. And then it's pinpointed to a certain number from that service provider. Boop. And so the one who lands on that number receives a call. So the thoughts receive a call. And they say, Jesse's calling me. I gotta go. Well, because they're traveling from a very vast field. And deep in the superconscious, it's a vast field. One of them takes 15 minutes to get there. Another takes an hour to get there. Another takes 20 minutes to get there. Well, then once they got into your mind and they come in at different times. Boop, 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 boop. So now once they're there, if you say, all right, let me use this thought. You finish using that thought. If you're done with the thought, you can say leave. And the thought will leave. And it's not by physically saying leave that they leave. It's a very interesting process that I'll go through on another day. But what happens is, because you've already called the thoughts, they're chilling around. And so whenever you feel a certain way again, and you want that same thought to come up, the thought comes straight back. Well then, the thought comes in, and then it generates like the mirror effect, the feeling, and the feeling gets you to a certain attitude, which is a cycle, a combination of thoughts and feeling produces an attitude, and that's where the meaning is given. And so when meaning is given, it must go to memory. And when it goes to memory, and that memory labels it as, this is an experience. And as it labels it as an experience, if you go through that cycle, it produces a belief. And then if you keep going through that belief time and time again, it makes it a perception, a bundle of belief. And so in the higher scale, sometimes in the next year, I'll go deeply into this one. Intention, thought, feeling, attitude, memory, and I'll go through this one slide and break it down with a big diagram. But here we know that it all starts with intention. That's all it starts with. Well then what's the key? The key is to marry a clear intention, clear intentional thoughts with elevated emotion. How you think and how you feel manifest everything you are in this life and everything you have. It's all based on these two faculties. Well then, what's the secret? The secret is kids. Kids are the secret. For years, kids have taught us everything there is to know about life. You want to know everything there is to know about life? Just watch kids. I tell you right now, no philosopher, no one. Get a kid and watch it. And this is a kid before the kid turns 7. Those first 7 years, watch them. They'll tell you everything about there is to know about life. Mentally, spiritually, financially. Kids will tell you all. Well, one of the greatest games the kids play is the game of pretend. And we all play this game, right? I pretend to be a fireman. I pretend to be so-and-so. Every kid plays a game of pretend. Why? Why did I play a game of pretend? I've never met a single kid that doesn't play this game. Well, the reason is because as long as you live, don't look at your physical body or how big or tall you look, you'll always be a kid. And you've never stopped playing a game of pretend. Until this day, you are still playing a game of pretend. Who you think you are today, you're pretending to be that very thing. Because your reality, which comes from your thoughts, right? But then we spoke about it, and you know very well. You can separate yourself from your thoughts. You can disattach yourself from your thoughts. Well then, who are you? Because the moment you attach yourself to a thought, it's a game of pretend you're playing. You chose a character. You chose a reality. And you're just playing that game. Well then, life as it is just a big game of pretend. Well then, who are you pretending to be right now? That's always been the highest question. But I want to become this, I want to become that. All these are pretend. There's nothing else to do. You know very well that you can separate yourself from your thought, which generates your reality. Well, if you can separate yourself from that, then you can separate yourself from your reality. Well, if that's the case, then you can choose a different reality. You've been doing that since a kid. Since you were a kid, you've been doing that. Well, today I want to play fireman. Tomorrow I want to play something else. I want to play police officer. So next week I want to play Barbie. Well, then some kids even come together with other kids in a different environment, and they look at the environment and say, you know what? This environment is good for mommy and daddy. Until this day. It's the very game you're playing. And you're doing it to yourself. Well then, now, let's have a look at this list. Actually, before we go to the list, what I want you to do is, I want you to pick someone next to you and have a chat with them about what you're pretending to be right now. That's what your reality is right now. It's the game you're pretending to be. It's a character you've chosen from your book. From your book. And so you don't get confused, let me just say one word to clarify things. Oh no, I'll let you guys continue. I'll join those guys there. For example, you pretend all the time that you're a bad leader, which is a lie. Because if you're a bad leader, you wouldn't be alive. because you have to delegate every single part of your body. You do it subconsciously, you don't even know you do it. Well, when I discovered this truth, I started playing all sorts of game of pretend. One morning I said, well, today I want to be, let me be a CEO of a company. So then I started my own company. Well, now my company is everywhere. People say, oh, wow. Well, that's my game. I woke up one time, I said, I want to be an author. So I started pretending to be an author. Well, I am now.
You enjoying our content? Thank you. If you want more, follow us on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, TikTok. You love the work that we do and you want to support us. You can buy exclusive content at Patreon and support us at Patreon, Subscribester, and Crypto. Find us at our website www.realitycreation.co. All links in the description below. You are listening to Joel Benicia from Reality Creation.
Well then, wherever you are right now is what you're pretending to be. And it sounds crazy because you think that, no, but I saw things happen to me and things go on. But the question is, how much of what's happening to you is actually your own doing?
That's what I mean about the duality. Like, there's two parts of you, and one wants to do stuff, and one wants to just accept it.
Yeah.
And yeah, you're sort of pretending that that's the more powerful side, when you're making it the more powerful side.
I think, according to the research or something, all the people, 100% of the people, live less than 1% conscious.
Yeah.
Just unconscious, but then everything's unconscious. Just maybe less than 0.1% we are doing conscious. Just remember what you have done consciously today.
Yeah, that's the amount of power the brain has over us, how little we actually know what we're doing.
Breathing unconsciously. Everything you're doing, seeing unconsciously. You're doing everything just unconsciously.
Because it's an automated system.
Yeah.
Well then, if there's an automated system, someone must have designed it, right? We design an automated system, and then we let it do its thing.
And I think that's why it was interesting what you said about kids. I think that's the idea behind kids, is that they haven't had that, like, up until the age of 7. Yeah, they're still having that control, so someone's still creating that, you know, mindset. And so that's why kids can be so insightful, perceptive, and have that power to sort of be what they want, because they haven't had it like drilled into their mind yet.
Because they're consciously being unconscious. Yes, that's what they do so well. They're consciously being unconscious. And that's the highest state. And that state is called heaven. Paradise, whatever you call it. That's it.
That's how we call it. Detachment.
And suppose you reach that state of detachment. The only reason you can be detached to something is when you realize you can recreate it whenever you want to. Think about it. Nobody loses a dollar and goes looking for it like crazy. I lose 10 cents or whatever. Wow, I can reproduce it whenever I want. So I have no attachment to it. Why? Because there's power. There's wisdom.
And that's what we call it. Imagine, that's the very best that we have. We just imagine everything. Then why should we imagine bad things? Imagine good things and do both on
yes.
If we got rejected from the job, from the small company, then imagine, oh, that's not for me. I will be working in Google next year. Imagine.
Well then, when you get rejected from a company, who fired who?
Yeah, I've been told that.
You fired yourself?
Yes.
Because it's always been your own doing. And it sounds crazy to people, they don't think so.
Yeah.
Remember, if all is a game of pretend, nobody's doing anything to you. It's always you. If you have the power, no one can do anything to you. Well then, suppose before I started my company, I was doing the work in Melbourne, and then I had to come back here for my scholarships and so forth. I chose to come back. But when I came back then I couldn't see it. I went around trying to look for jobs. I couldn't find a job. Why? Because deep down in me, I didn't want a job. I wanted to be a CEO. Well then, what did it take for me to actually accept that thought? I had to go around and actually look for jobs. But when I look back, I realize everything is always happening according to your instruction. Everything. At any point of time, the world is not doing something to you. It's doing something for you. Because you are at the command every time. And it's hard to believe that we are at command. But you are. Detachment is if you look at it in Hinduism philosophy, Buddhist philosophy, that's the Nirvana, and that's the Buddha right there. That's the state. And so different people experience it and give it the different names or different cultures, because it's based on it. But everybody that's experienced it has reached the state. Well then, there's people that have come in and misunderstood it and tried to attach themselves to the religion, but it's not a religion. It's a state. Just like the Bible calls it the kingdom of heaven. It's not a physical place. It's a state. And the reason it's a state from the inside is because you are not your thought. You are not your feelings. You are that which is behind the thought and feeling. What is that? It's wind. It's emptiness. It's space. Well, what's space? Someone look at space and say nothing. But space is that which holds the foundation of the universe.
Yes.
But it's not nothing. You see with a physical eye nothing. It's a lot. Hello, hello. Cool. All right. Let's bring it in. Let's bring it in. Let's bring it in, God. Let's bring it in. Let's bring it in. Let's bring it in. All right. Well, here's a list of emotion. Let's go. Let's go. Let's go. Let's go. Here's a list of emotion. That today, tomorrow, next week, at every point of time, you have to choose, and you have to pretend that that's how you feel. If you constantly and carefully start observing your mind and how it gets to a certain emotion, you realize there's a gap between the information and the feeling. There's always a gap, and the more you observe it, you see it clearly, and the gap becomes bigger, to the point where you can get to a state where the information comes in and then there's a gap of emptiness, and then the feeling comes in, and that gap of emptiness, you're chilling, just watching everything take place, and it's a long time before the emotion comes in. But when you're not conscious, it feels like information feeling straight away. Something happens, you boom, reacting.
That just reminds me of Bernadette and I. Bernadette's always saying, like, there's like a situation that happens that's about to be an argument. And, you know, I do something, and I've heard Bernadette say that she gets this time period to choose if she wants to be mad or, you know, just love. And, you know, if she wants to have fun, she chooses to be mad. And, yeah. But, yeah, there is that time period that gets bigger and bigger.
Yeah. The more conscious you become, that time period just becomes bigger and bigger. And so then, these are all sorts of career and pathways you can choose. And you can pretend to be. Well, then, the world will tell you, choose wisely. Be serious about your life. I tell you, don't do that. Kids don't do that. Kids are our role model. Imagine if you went to your parents and you say, little kids are my role model. They'll think you're crazy. Well then, what do you do with all these pathways and this and... Choose... I wrote same, but it's supposed to be for the sake. Choose for the sake of experimentation. Have fun. It's a game. Is it not a game? Is this not a game you've been playing since you were young? A game of pretend. Well, I'm gonna pretend I'm a lawyer today. Well, if I don't want to be a lawyer today, then I can change. Pretend to be this. Well, people will say, what about job security? What about finance and this and this? Provision. How are you going to eat? Have you seen a kid ever crying about what they're going to eat? If you play by the rules of this game of experimentation, provision never lacks. If you play by the rule of let the world decide what game I'm gonna play, you don't know the rules of that game. you're gonna lose. Because even the world system, it's also a game. The rich don't pay taxes, you pay tax. This. It's a full game. It's a maze. It's a matrix. Well then, if you choose to submit to that and play by that game, you'll lose. And the reason you're losing is not because you're not powerful. It's because you don't know that you can create your own game. And when you create your own game, you're the winner. Because there can only be one winner. And if it's a game about you and it's you, you're the only one in the game and you won. Well then, if that's your game, then you never need to compare to anybody. I never need to compare myself to anyone or to anything. Because how many participants in this game? One. How many winners? One. If you want to make yourself a loser, how many losers? One. Well then, someone say, oh, maybe this is too much, but reality is that when we go out of this, we gotta pay bills and this and this. Even that's a game. Oh man. If only you knew, right? You think you're making $10 an hour or $30 an hour, you think it's sufficient? Inflation. 10 years from now, you're still making $30 an hour. Well then, a simple chocolate is $30. What you gonna do? The only way you can win is if you know the rules of the game. And the only way you can know the rules of the game is if you're part of the creators of the game. Because you're born to create. You're a creator. Well then, choose. Not wisely. Have fun. Look around. And just enjoy. Why are you thinking too much? I looked around, I said, I want to write a book. Let me be an author. I am. I like this research. Let me go and see it. I am. Not once have I thought money. And money can't stop following me. Because power, money, wealth, riches, all that, it's always given to the creators. Well, then Apple creates their phone, they get all the money. Samsung creates Samsung, they get all the money. They're the creators. You're using the product of another creator. And you're making them rich. Well, then what do you have? What have you created in this planet? Nothing. Well, then, in business terminology, you have no assets. Because you've created nothing. Mentally, physically, psychologically. Well then, let's quickly go through this so I can finish this. So what's the thing? I was gonna go through this formula of frequency. Frequency is the number of occurrence of a repeating event per unit of time. What does that mean? It means that for a period of time, you are intentionally observing or thinking of a certain thought that's keeping you or keeping your life exactly where you are and where you don't want to be. And so when you go through this line of emotion and you start feeling a certain thing, that creates a frequency because there's a reoccurring. And frequency, the formula of frequency is 1/time. And it's the time you're taking dwelling on a certain thought. Well, what does that mean? Let's have a look. Actually, let's go straight into solving this because we only got 10 minutes. So there's a verse in Colossians 3:2, and he says this. He says, set your mind on things above, not on earthly things. What does that mean? Or another way of saying it, it says, set your affection on things above and not on things on earth. Well, then I went to do some research. This word mind here, it's talking about the Greek word phroneo. which means the faculty of perceiving and judgment. And the word above has to do with inner. It's the quarters of the heaven. And gay is that word earthly, which is a fixed boundaries, region or territory. So what is it saying? It's saying set your perception and judgment on the things in heaven, not on a fixed boundary. What does that actually mean?
I guess it means what you said before about intention. That's basically what it's saying. Yeah, set your mind and your perception on what you want to be, not where you are.
Very good. Now then, let's have a look and see how this works. This state of heaven is a state of limitless supply. It's a high state. I'm detached from all things, but I have everything. That's the highest state. Nothing can hurt me, but everything I have. The state of heaven is not of fixed boundaries. Well then, suppose it says to take your mind to the thing above. How do you get to the above? How do you get to heaven? Because it says your starting position, your location right now is on earth. And you have to get to heaven. And the portal, or the thing that has to get to heaven, is your mind. You have to move your mind from earth and take it to heaven. How do we do that? How do we take our mind from a state of boundaries and limited to a state of limitless power?
I would say vision and imagination and living backwards. Because Steve Jobs says you can't connect the dots going forwards, but you can connect it going backwards. So if you set your mind already on the end goal, so whatever happens during the present moment wouldn't matter because your mind's already like at the end. Does that make sense? Because all the things that's happening now is just a stepping stone for you to walk on to get to that point, which is heaven. So it's like you're becoming outcome focus instead of result focus.
Anybody else?
I think it comes around to that idea of detachment that we've mentioned before. Like, that's what, like, if heaven is above and we're like in boundaries here on earth, then those attachments to those earthly boundaries are what's tethering us, you know? Our attachment to places, feelings, people, emotions, like, that's all that's keeping us inside the boundaries. Like, if we detach those, then we can free ourselves from those boundaries and reach heaven.
Well then, I know you mentioned feelings and so forth being an attachment. And so we look at it in this sense. Let's say, let's go to this slide. We have to travel mentally from a fixed boundary to a limited supply. And Earth hit the jackpot there, and you also did. In different senses, because we gotta get on a flight. So what's the name of the plane that we get on? What's the name of the plane that takes us from earth to heaven?
Our mind.
That's the mind is the passenger.
Imagination.
Correct. That's the plane. That's always been the plane. You can be standing right here and your imagination will take you elsewhere. And that's what kids do, right? That's all they do. They just go on different flights. And it takes them to different places and they create that reality. Well then, suppose you want to create a different reality now. You want to become something else that you're not. I always say this. The word become is very interesting. It can be broken down into two aspects. You first must be. And then the rest comes. Well, when it talks about coming, it's talking about physical manifestation. Well, suppose I want to be an author. I wanted to publish research. I said, what game do I want to play today? I don't want to be known as Joel, just the engineer. I want to be known as John, Joel, the author. Well then, I went in, got my ticket, sat on my flight, traveled through imagination. And then I got to where Earth said, the outcome. I saw myself as an author. And then I came back on Earth, I said, oh cool, I am an author. Well then, 6 months later, in Japan called me. And during that 6 months, I wasn't just sitting around. No, I did my research. But anything that happened in my research makes no difference, right? If someone, a lot of people critique my research and say, you can't do this, you can't do that. I'm so detached to that because I've already arrived. Nothing you say to me now can affect the fact that I've already arrived. And the fact that I've already arrived, so what happened? I tried to publish a research in Australia, failed. In this, failed. Well, I was just trying to be a national, trying to get national publication. And then later on, try to become an author. Well then, the subconscious had a different plan for me. He said, why, hold on. Don't you know you already arrived in both locations? Well then, people in Japan call me. Joe, we've heard from your works you've done in robotics. We want to publish a research free of charge. You don't have to pay $5,000. And then come be an author. Dr. Benisha, straight away, get everything done. Well then, when did I arrive? I didn't arrive when they published me. I arrived 6 months ago. Same thing, when I was named as Young Achiever of the year. In the innovation section, what happened was, a year before, I went on stage, I opened my arms, I got on a flight, I went, I arrived, I opened my eyes, I said, guys, I've won it. People look at me, what the hell, what do you mean you won Young Achiever? Well then, I chill. A year later, and this award goes to Joel Benisha. I don't need to jump, no excited, I arrived a year ago. Well then, I can keep listing so and so on. I've just been playing games. People came to me, oh Joe, matter of fact, when I was at uni, people used to hate me. They used to hate me because I'd never looked like I was doing work. Study hard, dude. What the heck? What are you trying to do? I've already arrived. Yes, I'm not lazy, and I still do the work that needs to be done, but you won't see a single bit of mental effort. Mental effort is your biggest enemy, because what you're trying to do, you're trying to address, confront. What are you trying to do? All is mental effort. If I can just get there. To produce an innovative idea, no mental effort is applied. Most ideas come when people go for a run, people in the shower. You know the amount of innovation comes out in the shower? You'll be surprised when you're not even thinking of being innovative, when you let everything down. Boom, it just pops up. Boom, 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 boom. Your problems solve itself. It doesn't need you to solve it. It needs you to delegate. It needs you to have a vision. It needs you to speak a destination and then let it do itself. Like a GPS, I put a destination. I can't be, the GPS says turn in 100 meters, turn left. And I'm telling the GPS, no, I'm turning right. Well, then why did you put the destination on GPS? The whole purpose is to take the burden away from you. You just tell us where you want to go, we're going to figure out the algorithm to get you there. That's what the GPS has always been doing. And that's what life has always been doing. Well, then those who don't understand, trying to have control. Do your part and leave the rest. Just like I say, I want to wake up 5 a.m. tomorrow. That's my part. I've given an order. What happens when I'm sleeping? I know not. How I'm going to wake up? I don't know. But guess what? I always wake up at 5 a.m. on time, in the milliseconds. Not early, not late. Well, anybody wants to add anything?
I think I just want to emphasize the live in the pretend, like live in the end. Whatever you want, you know, be it. Like all your desires, all your dreams, all your visions, what we were talking about, who you're pretending to be right now. You're only pretending that you don't have those things. So pretend you have them now.
And then it comes.
I think the biggest thing, you can't worry about how. Because as soon as you worry about, I've done it before where I've planted a seed, I've said this will manifest, but then I start walking around going, I need to do this, I need to put money here, etc. That would deter it from actually coming. It's like when you get on a plane, most of us don't worry about the pilot. We assume the pilot has the degree. It'll take us to South Africa, to Zimbabwe. We just get on the plane, right? It's the same with manifestation. Once I've planted the seed, I've had the vision, I don't care how it happens. So,
people get so comfortable on planes. We get sleep.
Sleep. You get to the point where you sleep. And
just let me know when we get there.
Exactly. Because that was the biggest thing about the how. You've just got to be. So then 6 months ago, when I couldn't find a job, I used to come here dressed like I was from work. Every day, I'd wake up at 8, I was at work the whole day, and I'd come here, and everyone would be like, "Sis, are you at work?" I said, "Yeah, I run my own business." And what do I do now, 6 months later? I own 2 businesses. I pretended. People laughed at me, my family laughed at me, and I said, "I'm an executive director." I put it on LinkedIn, I said, "I'm an executive director," everywhere, and now I'm an executive director. You pretend. I imagine, because everyone is a reflection of you, right? You've got to imagine people congratulating you. My law degree, for example, I don't study, I don't go to classes during the week. If you tell me who my lecturer is, I wouldn't be able to tell you.
No, that's a bad example. Go to class.
No. but for my exams, I messaged a few people, said, "Oh, you did this, unit last semester, can I have your exam notes?" Get the exam notes 2 hours before the exam, go through them, I get a credit. This toiling is crazy, because when I was at school, I used to actually study 5 o'clock in the morning and then fail. 48 D's for my last exams, and I went, "What is this? I studied." But because success is a state of mind, if you see yourself successful, you must be successful.
Well, if you guys want like a very, very current example, I am doing a unit in summer semester. I have not looked at that unit since week one. It's week 6 now. Or week 5 or week 6, something like that. My midterm is tomorrow. I haven't even looked at any of the content. So I after work, on my way back, I'm like, "Man, what am I going to be doing this whole night? I don't feel like stressing. I'm not even bothered." Like, I've already felt like everything's going to be fine. Literally 20 minutes after that, my mate sends me a message with literally the exam, with the midterm questions. So I have basically, this is not going on record, okay?
I'm thinking, stop. This is not a good example we're setting today. Study, people.
No. I was just at this point of tranquility, yeah. Just like relaxed. And then that moment comes to me, the exact mid-semester questions. He's messaging me and it's like, Yeah, man, I don't know how I got it. Don't tell anyone, but here it is. So now I have the mid-sense.
Cut this one.
Yeah, okay, cut this one.
But the point is not, don't study, don't do this. The point is the state of mind you're in. That sufficient completion state of mind, the heaven state of mind, is that it's all done. I'm good. That's where you want to be. And if you're like that, things will always be delivered to you.
Yeah, I just want to stress, like, do not think about the how, because the how will tear it, and, you know, the fears and doubts will start setting in. You know, live in the end, and I would say to grow your why. Why do you want this? Because when you grow your why, and the why is big enough, the how take care of itself.
Cool. And remember, it's a game. Have fun. Thank you.
You enjoying our content? Thank you. If you want more, follow us on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, TikTok. You love the work that we do, and you want to support us. You can buy exclusive content at Patreon, and support us at Patreon, Subscribestar, and Crypto. Find us at our website www.realitycreation.co. All links in the description below. You are listening to Joel Benicia from Reality Creation.